And he was like, why don't you just join us as an employee? And I was like, absolutely not. And then I, you know, met more people on Upstream, and I was like, this is it. Like, this is the thing that I want to pour myself into.
Hey, friend, it's David Nabinsky here in Brooklyn. So excited for this conversation with Sarah Wood. Here at Portfolio Career Podcast, we help you take ownership of your portfolio career and design the life that you want to live. Sarah is currently the head of growth and community at Upstream, a social networking app that is built around generosity and community. You will learn how Sarah serendipitously got this role in late 2020. You'll learn about Sarah's TEDx talk called Flip Your Ratio, Find Your Joy, how you can bring more joy into your life through the work that Sarah is amplifying others to do the same as joy soldiers. You will learn how Sarah has chosen to design her life around connection and reflection. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There, you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which has the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Sarah. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You know, there's like a classic like podcast, I don't know, like first question people say, like, what did you have for breakfast today? I was just curious if you maybe had oatmeal this morning.
So actually I would, and this is definitely something that you can see throughout my entire life, but I go through phases. So there, you know, oatmeal was like a 7-year phase, probably one of my longest phases, but I am out of the oatmeal phase. And so for breakfast, I actually had watermelon, like a baby watermelon, like, I'm just getting, you know, I'm just exploring the Whole Foods delivery. Yesterday I had a pineapple. So I'm, you know, trying to spice it up in the morning.
And so you mentioned a little bit of how oatmeal's not a thing anymore, but it used to be a thing for you. Maybe talk to us a little bit about oats and woes and kind of some of the backstory there.
Absolutely. So I say that I talk about oatmeal still with such care and such respect for the food that it is, because not only, I mean, if it's, you know, a food that you like to eat, I also found like a lot of solace in it, in college. And it started, so I, you know, if you went to like a university over the summer, you might've gone to orientation. And so I was actually working my first summer, after freshman year with the orientation department, and, you know, I was helping take tours and answer the phone. And it was great because I met a lot of students, but it was a rather lonely existence. I like lived in a dorm by myself, and I just started playing with my food, frankly. And there was oatmeal in the dining hall, and I, you know, started to use their cut fruit and make designs, and like it shows how, you know, lonely I was feeling. And then I started to like go to Whole Foods and like bring in, you know, cacao nibs and like, you know, some more like interesting ingredients. And I started to take pictures of them, and they got pretty elaborate and pretty beautiful. And I started posting them on Instagram. You know, it was early Instagram. You could actually post whatever you wanted. And so I was posting these pictures of oatmeal, and people started to reach out to me and ask if I, you know, would make them bowls of oatmeal. And I was like, absolutely. Like, I am lonely. Do you see me? And, you know, school got back in session. The Instagram, like, I aggregated a lot of followers. And the first like transaction I did in oatmeal is someone Venmo'd me, I think like $7, and showed up to the sorority house that I was living in. And I, you know, gave them a bowl of oatmeal. And really from there, the account was called Oats and Woes. And, you know, I started to do more of these ad hoc bowls. And then I was in a class where we formed a team, and we, you know, like put together a whole process where we were popping up in different coffee shops and different markets and at different events and, you know, selling these oatmeal bowls. And it was really awesome. And, you know, there's like a whole movement around oatmeal, which I was beaming about as like an oatmeal evangelist. And it looked so beautiful, you know, and it was like the one place that I really had control in my life. And I was able to put up this amazing, like beautiful, perfect projection of like, oh, look how good my life is. Like I can make perfect breakfast, et cetera. And it was a complete facade because on the outside, I was doing this, you know, these beautiful oatmeal bowls and looked like I had it all together. I was in the business school, I was in the sorority, like all, I had all the boxes checked. And on the inside, like I was having like a really, really hard time from a mental health perspective and was really struggling like with my own relationship with food, which I think was really interesting that I was spending all this time thinking about food and, you know, talking about food and putting up this, everything's great. And there was a moment when Oats and Woes, it had like, I think like 10, 12,000 followers at one point. And I realized that I needed to actually talk about what was going on in my life because people were believing this lie that I had created. And so I started to talk about my mental health experience. I had a pretty serious eating disorder. And so I was able to start to share and make meaning around that. And that was really, you know, I don't make oatmeal anymore. I obviously don't even eat it very much anymore. But when we stopped serving oatmeal, like people stuck around the account and there was just like an outpouring of emails, messages. I got like handwritten letters, all about like, thank you for actually talking about what is actually going on in your life, because it's so easy to put up, you know, those facades and those perfect masks. And yeah, so that's a little bit about my history with oatmeal.
And then you turned it into an incredible TEDx talk and around joy. And yes. And for people that haven't listened, put the link into the chat or into the show notes about this incredible TEDx talk about joy and what brings you joy and the joy ratio and the numerator and denominator. And so maybe talk to, and then lead into kind of your joy soldier work. And so maybe talk to us a little bit about, you know, what is joy? Can it be manufactured? Can it be, is it something in our control? And yeah.
Absolutely. And so I would say I got really curious about joy and worthiness because I like had very little joy myself when I was a sophomore in college. And I, you know, I had talked about transferring and leaving and, you know, my parents, like I was definitely like on a mental health watch. Like I think I got lunch with my mom like every other day. She would drive to our college campus just to like check in on me. And I share that because I like the talk looks like everything is like tied up like so beautifully, like, oh, da, 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 you know, like this is how you can change your brain. And so I always want to start with just really painting the picture of I was really stuck in a really dark place. And sometimes I like think about where I was then and where I am now. It like is almost unfathomable of how different my experience of my life is. And so I share that because when I was at this really dark place, one of my college professors who actually studied neuroscience, studied positive habits, did all this work in this school of thought called Positive Organizational Scholarship. I was so lucky to be in her classroom, and she noticed, you know, a shift in my behavior, and she took a vested interest in me and checked in on me a lot. And we started to work together. She started to share some of the neuroscience around just the way that our brains are wired. And she also was a yoga teacher. And so in that work, got really interested in the neuroplasticity of our brain. And so what that means is our brain is malleable. It responds to what we repeatedly do. And it makes sense. Like there, I give myself compassion and grace for like little Sarah, that she was so lost because I was so fixated on what was not right. And our brain is naturally negative. It's, you know, that's the way we evolved, was to be acutely able to notice what was wrong. You know, that's how you would see a predator. That's how you would know, like, that there's a crack in your cave wall, it's gonna like fall on you, so get out of the cave, you know, whatever. And that all is in the brainstem, the lowest part, the amygdala of our brain. And our brain evolved up. So at the top of our brain, you know, is the prefrontal cortex, where we do like our most sophisticated thinking, our creativity. And so when we get stressed, we just like fall back down into our like survival mechanism. And I was living in that survival mode for like years, and I had no idea how acutely stressed I was. And so I share this because there's so much that we can do to get out of this evolutionary stressful zone, but you just have to be aware of it first. And I spent so many years just like in my own discontent and without knowing why, and then feeling so much shame around the fact that here I was, an able-bodied, healthy woman who was able to go to college. Like, it looked like I was so ashamed by my inability to feel good. And the awareness around the way that our brain is wired was really liberating for me, because not only was I able to give myself compassion, but I was able to see, okay, there are things that I can do. And I need to look at how I'm talking to myself. I need to look at where I'm spending my time. I need to look at literally the neural pathways that I'm walking every single day, because if I continue to walk this path of perfectionism and negativity, it's not going to go away. And you have to like actively work to check your narrative and actively work to build these new habits. And then, just in case people don't have 20 minutes and don't want to watch the talk, I think one thing that's really helpful, especially if you are, you know, someone who is a visual learner, I think the joy ratio is the thing that was just most illuminating for me. And it comes from a lot of the research that Barbara Fredrickson did around the positivity ratio, where she found that our brain basically weighs stimuli in a 3-to-1 ratio. So it takes 3 positive stimuli for every 1 negative stimuli. And what that means is that you have to work 3 times as hard to notice good things in your life than negative things in your life. So if I were to ask you, like, hey, David, like, what was the worst birthday party you had as a child? You'd be like, oh, it was this one. No one came, like, blah, blah, blah. And then if I ask you, like, to recall, you know, the best 3 meals that you've eaten in the past month, you would be like, you know, and so it's much easier to access our negativity. And that's why it is, you know, like such grueling work to rewire your brain. But when you do it, it sticks. And I think that is, that awareness is the fact and like the insight that can change everything. If we all operated under that assumption that everyone else's brain is negatively primed, what can we do to help them see the good in their life? Like, what can we do to elevate them? I think we would be living in a very different world.
And so then we have the opportunity to, and this is in the talk, of lift people up. We meet 27 people, something like mm-hmm. that every day. And we have the opportunity to either kind of meet them where they are and kind of say, you know, continue, or we can bring them down, or we can lift them up. And what I think what is so amazing about the talk and kind of your journey since then is now you realize this, and now your work is focused on the things that increase the numerator and increase your joy around connection and reflection. Maybe talk to us a little bit about some other kind of practical thing. So maybe let's talk a little bit about kind of your work now at Upstream and kind of building community there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, because I think it's so important to get into like the tactical, because it's like, oh yeah, you know, reframe your narrative. It's like, okay, shut up. Like, I don't, like, stop. So it's like, what can you tactically do each day? And it's not like keep a gratitude journal. It's like, I think that there are, I mean, gratitude journals are great. I have one, you know, like that's whatever. But I think one, my favorite way of operating in the world is like, and I call it being a joy soldier, right? Is this idea that we have the power to lift people up. And you can energize people by being a good listener. You can energize people by remembering details about them. You can energize people by like asking good questions. You know, there's so many ways you can be a joy soldier. You don't need to be this extroverted like cheerleader. There's many ways to do joy soldier work. But so I like to think about as I go through my day, how am I holding the mirror for the people that I meet? So that they see themselves as, you know, the lovely, worthy of love and worthy of joy people that I see them as. And it has given me a lens as I ask questions. Of course, I want to know if someone is like struggling with something, I want to listen closely with them. But I also really try to ask questions that allow people to exist in that positive zone and really like bring a microscope to the good things that are happening in their life that maybe they haven't noticed. And what that looks like tactically is, I love this question, like, what is a small good thing that happened to you today? And before I joined Upstream, which is a startup all about generosity and helpfulness, I was actually working on the trading floor at Goldman Sachs. But I think what I learned there is that, I mean, among a bunch of things, is that every organization is just the summation of individuals. And so your experience in an organization is really just your experience with the people you interact with. And so I started to ask my boss, you know, hey, like, what's your small win of the day? And so he started to ask it back to me. And we created this like very positive, like locus around us and the people that we interacted with. And I think it's so powerful how your language shapes your reality and how you can help people also have positive experiences. So,
which is also, and before I forget, which is before we started this podcast, you said, I said, oh, do you have any questions? And sometimes people ask like, how long is this? Blah, blah, blah. And you go, what's your small win of the day? So there's, so I want to honor you for that, Sarah, for hey, you could do this, or hey, this is something I might recommend, or here's something you could think about, versus like, no, this is what you did 20 minutes ago.
It's become a bit of my calling card. I love it. And I love it. I encourage everyone else to use it. I definitely didn't come up with it. I think someone did it to me and I was like, yeah, this goes right in my toolkit. And so Upstream is a startup where 9 people now, soon to be 10. And one thing I noticed like very early is that at a startup, like you are constantly focused on the negative. Like you are looking for bugs, you are looking for things breaking, like you are, you know, apologizing to users about the thing that broke. And that's just like working at a startup generally. It has nothing to do with like the quality of the company. You're always trying to figure out what broke so you can fix it. And so one of the first things I did when I joined is I created a celebrations channel in our Slack. And our CEO is amazing. He's been very supportive of me joy soldiering. And so I was like, hey, can you post in here first so that everyone doesn't think it's like my idea? And we started to shout out good things that were happening at the company. And so if someone got hired through Upstream, if someone raised capital through Upstream, you know, I would find tweets where people are talking about how much they loved using Upstream, not drop them in there. And so we started strength spotting, and it just like my experience of the company changed. And, you know, it was so helpful from an organizational level to make sure that our ratio was in balance, because of course you need to focus on what's going wrong and fix those things. That's one of the things I bring up in the talk is like, you'll never have a zero in the denominator of a fraction. Like you will always, you'll never get rid of negative things in your life. That's impossible. And so the work of a life is really just to increase the numerator. And that's like all of the moments of joy. And so instead of trying to make the most perfect thing ever, 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 it's like, why don't we look for the good that we're creating in the world? And so that's if you work at a startup or if you like have a Slack or for your nonprofit or anything, I found that to be like a really tactical, helpful way to also just change the narrative of a culture. So that's another example. And then I would say I am so lucky because there is now very little space between what I think I was put on earth to do, which is help build healthier organizations and be a joy soldier, and being head of community at Upstream, because we view our like mission on earth is to have like more positive values-driven professional networking. And it is rooted in generosity and helping each other. Our CEO like basically turned himself into an app. He's like the most helpful person I've ever met. If I had like a dollar for every time he asked me how he could help me or how he could make me more joyful, like I wouldn't even have to work. But I feel like it is such a unique moment and like such a privilege to feel like there is no space between my vocation and my purpose. And so all that I do, like sometimes I'm, and the community roles are interesting because sometimes you're doing like very elevated, you know, theoretical work where you're like, what is the purpose of community? Like, what is community? And you're reading and you're, you know, having these very intelligent discussions. And then other times I'm like tech demoing, like holding up my screen on the Zoom and being like, no, it's this button. You push this button, you know? And so all of those tiny things I feel like are in service to helping people help each other. And so I feel no anger or no like frustration about it because I know it's in purpose. It's in aligned with the purpose with which I feel that I was put on earth to do.
And take us to that October 2020, Upstream event, Kirsten Green, afterwards. And I'm not as familiar with the app as you are, but I think there's a talk and then there's breakout rooms and then there's, the asks are posted and stuff like that. And then there's an opportunity for people to engage. Talk to us a little bit about after that event, maybe a certain ask that was posted by Alex and kind of a conversation that you two had.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I was working at Goldman at the time, very happily. I had moved teams to work for this incredible woman named Stephanie Cohen, who to this day, I admire so much. She created this program called Launch with GS. It was $500 million at the time. Now it's a $1 billion commitment to closing the investment gap for diverse and underrepresented founders. And Kirsten Green was one of the investors that this program had backed. And so I'm relatively new on Twitter. I see that she's speaking on Upstream. I was like, I have no idea what that is. Kirsten Green is like such a like intellectual superhero of mine. So I go to the event and as I make my account, et cetera, I'm like poking around and I read the feed and it's all, expecting it to be like news or updates or something. And it's all just people helping each other. And I was like, that is so interesting. Like, this is amazing. And in college, I had worked for a startup called Give and Take, which is, Adam Grant's company. And it, was all around the same thing of giving and asking for help. And so I was like, this is incredible. And then I go to the event and I see Kirsten Green speak. She's a genius. It was fantastic. And then I get put, like, I had no idea that I was going to get dropped into these one-on-one video chats with strangers. And I was like, oh my God. And it's also like COVID and I haven't really been meeting new people. And I get into these meetings and everyone is just like, so eager to connect and to help me. And it was consistent. I think there was three matches. Every single person was like, how can I help you? What can I do for you? And I was like, what is this app? Like, I was like, and from an organizational culture perspective, it was really interesting because I feel like we often study, negatively deviant cultures. Like in the news, it's always like, this company turns out to have a horrible negative culture. And I had never interacted on a social platform that was like primed for flourishing and for helpfulness and things on, the positive scale of interaction. So I, of course, was like, I have to help this company. I will do anything to help them. And I have a history of like reaching out to things I feel really passionate about and being like, I will volunteer here. And they're like, we don't need volunteers. Like, we don't need interns. I'm like, I will be your intern. Like, I will come across the country to help you. And they just finally give up. So, and let me help them, or like in what I think is helpful, but really I'm like chief cheerleader. I just want to cheerlead. So Alex had posted and asked that he was looking for a head of community. I reached out to him and was like, hey, I love my job, but I'd love to volunteer to help you. I so believe in what you're doing at Upstream, et cetera. And he was like, why don't you just join us as an employee? And I was like, absolutely not. And then I, you know, met more people on Upstream and I was like, this is it. Like, this is the thing that I want to pour myself into. And since I joined in early November, I have watched companies like raise capital that from investors they never would have met without Upstream. I have like made friends on Upstream. I went to Vermont with a friend I made on Upstream. It's just been like one of the most incredible things to bear witness to. And I honestly just feel privileged to be able to watch it happen and to have like a seat at the table of like positive human interaction, because I feel like there's just so much negativity on social platforms, which totally makes sense. And to this day, I will just marvel at how Alex built this community to be so like well-intentioned, so respectful, so helpful. It's a marvel in itself.
And so you had this conversation and you kind of threw yourself out there and then you started a couple of weeks later. And it sounds like that's, you know, that's a takeaway for people to try to like leech on, but volunteer for things that excite you and you kind of never know. And I think I was reading in one of your blog posts around like just the power of serendipity and how much serendipity is kind of played into your journey and stuff. And we are just kind of the collection of the different conversations than people we meet. And if they are magical, serendipitous, lucky moments, then that's a good thing.
Absolutely. And I say this like also like flippantly, like, oh yeah, you know, I just walked away from my job. Like, I'm not a very, I would say I'm a rather risk averse person. I think anyone that like goes and works at an investment bank after college, like has maybe not that super high of a risk appetite. And I think what I realized was like the biggest risk to me was that I didn't jump at Upstream and like that I would miss out on this ability to like so closely couple my purpose and my vocation. And I'm super lucky. Like I get nervous giving people advice who come to me. They're like, oh, like I'm at this bank and like, I want to join a startup. Like I totally acknowledge that I have gotten so lucky to have fallen. It's like the first startup I looked at to love it so much, et cetera. But I also feel that when you are showing up as your true self and you are able to articulate like who you are and what matters to you, like the opportunities that are meant for you will come to you when you surrender your attachment to the outcome of things. And I have been infamous for like white knuckling through things and like trying to control outcomes. And I think what's been beautiful with Upstream is like every day, if we help one person, like that's enough. And I know I should probably have like lofty goals for like all of these things, but really I'm able to take a much more mindful approach than I have in the past to be like, what am I doing today? How is it helping someone today? And for me, that's how I am now evaluating my life, is like on this joy soldier metrics versus like what I would have evaluated things in college. You know, I'm really looking to see, like, have I created joy for myself and have I created joy for other people? And to me, if the answer to both of those is yes, like that is a home run of the day.
And so one of the kind of things that you talked about is the kind of the asks of Upstream. And I'm wondering if there's a way that like there's things that you've learned for people how to inside the app, but then also outside the app of how to, you know, send an outreach email, or just, I don't know, the art of the ask. If there's any kind of tactical insights that you learned from that, I would love to hear it.
Yeah. Well, and I know our mutual friend, Carly Valenci, she is like queen of the reach out. So I've learned a lot from her, but I think for a long time, I would not ask for help. I was like, and I think that is like a very ego driven thing to think that I, Sarah Wood, and her like whatever have is like as much information as like a culmination of hundreds of people. Like, I think that being unable to ask for help can be from like a place of wanting to control and like not wanting to appear weak. And so I think once I did a lot of self work around like, hey, I need to ask for help because I have a lot of blind spots, I have a lot of biases, there's no way I would know all of these things, and forgave myself for not knowing, I have become like pretty shameless in asking for help. And I've also started to learn and really truly believe that humans love to give help. And so if you're going to make an ask, like, how can you empathetically write that ask so that they can help you? And so what I mean by that is, if you ask someone who works maybe in like sports business, and if you ask them for an introduction to like a CEO of a healthcare company that you like have no indication that they would know, they're not going to be able to help you. And that makes them feel like bummed, and like, it makes you look like you don't know them. And so I think what can be really helpful is, of course, like, ask things that maybe they might not be able to help you, and maybe you'll be delighted. But I think a really good ask is something that's like in the realm of they can probably help you, and writing it so clear that it's like precisely clear what it is that you actually want, and it's time bound and it's specific. And just setting it up so that they can like slam dunk help you, and then they'll feel awesome and you'll get what you want. And I think that that's been really helpful in how I've made asks, is being like, I'm specifically looking for this thing. And of course, sending thank you notes after, if you get the help that you need, I have found also like really helps people want to help you more.
Love it. Specific and time bound.
And then like closing the feedback loops. Like, I am obsessed with small feedback loops. So if someone introduces me to someone, I go back to the person who introduced me and be like, hey, that phone call was amazing. This is what I learned from that person. And then if I like continue to be friends with that person or something, like going back to that person who helped me and being like, I want you to know that like what you did has affected my life to the positive. And I feel like being able to hold those mirrors and close those feedback loops is just like really a helpful way to make that person feel awesome, and also like let them know that what they have done for you really matters and had impact.
Cool. Love that. Closing the loop. we'll have to let Carly know that she's been an incredible support in this special conversation. Anything else that you think that we missed?
I think just like the one thing I love to just really underscore whenever I talk about joy and just talk about just anything is like, I just want to level set that like, you're not going to be joyful all the time. I'm not joyful all the time. You're not supposed to be joyful all the time. Like, I think a real heart-centered and holistic life looks like feeling everything. And like, if you feel crappy, it's okay to feel crappy, and just know like what your levers for joy are to take care of yourself before you start to take care of other people. And I think of connection as, yes, of course, to other people, but I think you also need to connect to yourself. And so I don't think I hit on that before, but I think that's what I really want to close with, is the friendship that you have with yourself will help fuel and help illuminate and really fuel all of the friendships you have with other people, and, you know, always take care of yourself.
Love that. Cool. Well, after people take care of themselves, they want to then connect with you, learn more about Upstream. What's the best way they could do so, Sarah?
Yeah. So I love to be connected generally. So I'm on Twitter. It's Sarah_Wood. Or Instagram, it's @GoJoySoldier, or I have a website called joysoldier.com if you want to be coached around the joy in your life. I do community consulting and just like general coaching about flourishing systems and flourishing in your life. So I'm happy to chat about any of these topics always. And this is such a delight. And thank you for asking such thoughtful questions and, you know, holding a mirror, because that is real joy soldier work.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Really appreciate it. Hey, friend. Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.